Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon, and last week we started talking about the Oscar Grant trial, which moved to Los Angeles. We got a rundown of some of the things that was taking place in the preliminary hearings, including the gag order and, you know, the type of people that are showing up and what we may expect with the trial being in Los Angeles after Johannes Mezley's lawyers push to have a change of venue. One of the things that was interesting was looking at the judge. For people who aren't familiar, it was a judge who acquitted the cops that shot Sean Bell 50 times in New York a few years ago, and that judge was a Bush appointee, a Bush senior appointee. And we wanted to make sure that we understood the role that the judge in Oscar Grant's trial could possibly play or not play. So joining us on the line we have is Age from the October 22nd Coalition. And welcome to the show. How you doing?
Thank you very much, David. Thank you guys for having me on. I'm doing great, especially off of Friday with the beautiful show of presence and solidarity.
Most definitely. Now, you know, Robert Perry, that's the judge. I'm familiar with the name because of the Rampart scandal, but I lived in L.A. for a minute. So let's familiarize the audience that's in other places that don't know either of those names and what the significance is.
Okay, well, if folks do remember, God, it seems like it was only yesterday to me, but, you know, being in L.A. And doing this kind of work, it never seems to go away. See, mid-'98 was when Rafael Perez of the LAPD Rampart crash unit was arrested for stealing pounds and pounds of cocaine from their evidence room. And not only that, but there was a couple other things that happened around the Rampart case right around then. There was a bank robbery in L.A. that got linked back to LAPD officer David Mack, who was also part of Rampart. And also there was the shooting by, I believe his name was Officer Liga, who shot Officer Gaines,
Gaines.
A white officer who shot and killed a black officer in what was allegedly a case of road rage. Became uncovered that Gaines was also working for Death Row Records.
Right. Well, let's just stop there for a second just so we can bring people up to speed. Rafael Perez, David Mack, Kevin Gaines. Those names people may be familiar because when we talk about the assassination or the killing of the notorious B.I.G. and Tupac, those names seem to pop up because of their affiliation with Death Row. I think David Mack and Gaines actually were employed by Suge Knight at one time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yes.
There's definitely ties there. Yes, these officers, obviously, because, you know, their role in other cases, and I'm sure their name could be uncovered in all kinds of other things, but, you know, all these things happened right around within the same couple of months. And so finally, Chief Bernard Parks of LAPD was basically forced to put together an internal investigation team on Rampart. And, of course, they uncovered all kinds of criminal activity from, you know, placing evidence, lying about people they were picking up off the streets, selling drugs, prostitution in the community, everything from, you know, simple brutality to murder and cover-ups all through the Rampart division. Because of that, there's about 10,000 cases of people whose arrests and records were brought into question because of all the evidence tampering and such and such. So when all this came to court, Rafael Perez, in his attempts to get himself out of trouble, you know, he snitched on a whole bunch of other LAPD officers who were involved in it, and it was dozens and dozens of officers. But then when it came to court, you know, thanks in large part to Judge Robert Perry, they were able to strike a deal for all of the LAPD officers that were involved in it, except for Perez, since he was the original person who got caught with like 6 or 7 pounds of cocaine. He still ended up doing a few minute years in jail. But every single one of these other LAPD officers was able to get out of jail by testifying against other officers. So they all basically got away with it because they snitched each other out. When they snitched each other out, they all got let go.
And this was something that Perry allowed to have happen.
Yeah, exactly. He was the one overseeing that, and he's the one, you know, who apparently thought that was a path towards justice. You know, snitch on your homie, and then he'll snitch on you, and we'll scratch each other's backs, you know. And so this is the type of person we're dealing with in this case.
Right.
He has a history of letting off police officers on the most egregious of crimes.
Right. It's interesting that you brought this up because I ran into an officer, you know, that's been pretty sympathetic towards the case. And one of the things that he had noted, he said that the people in his locker room weren't too worried about this going to L.A. In fact, some of them were kind of like, this is going to be cool. And at first, I didn't really understand, and I was asking why. He just kept kind of alluding that, you know, people don't seem to be too worried. And when I heard that this was going to be the judge, it all kind of fell into place that this, just because it's in L.A., if it's in this courtroom, there's a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, Los Angeles not only has a history of wide police brutality and murder and such, and you know, oppression and repression at the hands of the police, but at the same time, we know we have the legacy of Rodney King, you know, of numerous cases like that where police are always let go for the most heinous crimes against the people of our communities. You know, it happens on a daily basis. Not only does the brutality and repression happen here, but they're also being covered up on a daily basis. So even though Los Angeles seems to be, in a lot of ways, it seems like they effed up a lot in bringing the case down here, and, you know, basically what they did was unify the whole coast, you know, in support of Oscar Grant. But beyond that, on the real so-called justice level, you know, who has ever been punished in L.A. for the crimes of the police? And even when the Rampart case came out and none of the officers were convicted in that, and then what happened with that? They tried to talk about it as though this was just a Rampart crash thing. If they disbanded the crash unit, everything would be okay. But if you live in Los Angeles, you know this was happening in 77th Division, Newton Division, all throughout South Central, East L.A., Watts, within the Sheriff's Department. It's widespread. You know, it wasn't a scandal. This is widespread, well-known as regular police practice, and
right.
Police are never held accountable for it here. So,
well, you know, let me just ask you this, and I think you're making I think your points definitely need to be underscored. If you're just tuning in, that's the voice of Age. He's a member of the October 22nd Coalition down in Los Angeles, dedicated to stopping police brutality. And he's also with the L.A. Coalition for Justice for Oscar Grant. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, and I remember the whole thing around Rampart, primarily because of the work that we were doing around the Tupac and Biggie killings.
Right.
And we had one of the people that was starting to blow the whistle on all this. I guess he was Detective Sullivan, who, you know, had beef with Bernard Parks. And as he was talking and he was, you know, getting on the case of Rafael Perez and talking about David Mack and this, that, and the other, what eventually came out of this conversation, which, you know, and you tell me from the work that you did, with the gang ties that these L.A. police officers seem to have, and the fact that they were men of color, seemed to be the reason why they got caught in the first place, that there was some umbrage that came out. And what wasn't explained was how many of these officers in L.A. and definitely in the sheriff's department have these social clubs / gangs, you know, in other departments, the Savages and I think the Nomads or the Vikings, you know, these
yeah.
clubs that exist. So for people who don't know, when you're down in L.A., these officers have these fraternities / gangs that exist where they have initiations and they kind of wear the tattoos and do the same thing that the gangs do. And so you had some of those officers of color associating themselves in this case with some of the black gangs like the Bloods, and that's where the beef really started to come in. Am I off on that, or can you expound upon that? Because I don't think people really understand how deep it gets in L.A. when it comes to this.
Yeah, I think you mentioned something. I was definitely going to bring up the case of the Vikings, which I believe was out of the Linwood Sheriff's Department. It was literally a gang of police officers that would go around crossing out other gangs. They were doing drive-bys on people.
Yep.
You know, doing amazing, ridiculous stuff, and this stuff is almost unknown, you know? And, of course, those gang ties to the Bloods and such, but, you know, with the crash unit, they all had, like, their, royal flush tattoos with the skull on it. And, you know, and they functioned just like gangs. They ran prostitution rings. They sold drugs on the streets. They killed people. You know, they beat people. They were living the entire life. I mean, in that area, you know, it's really interesting. The year before that, 1997, on October 22nd, March that year, which I believe was just the second or third year that it happened, there were some young brothers that we got pictures of who held a huge sign that said F Officer Perez and F Rampart crash.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was a year before this stuff even came out, and these guys are trying to bring it to the forefront. You know, these police officers have been functioning like that in L.A. for a long time, and in that area, especially in Rampart, we had gone out and done some investigating, you know, just around MacArthur Park, which is, you know, an infamous place in that area. And, you know, we got dozens of stories from youth of police stopping them for supposed gang ties and telling them, the kids, literally stuff like, you know, I know this is kind of cliche for us to say, but it's only cliche because it literally is the truth of what they say, is that the police will say, who's a more powerful gang, you or us? Well, it's us, because, you know, we can do this and get away with it all day. And we've had some amazing stories of police just pulling the most heinous of crimes off. And in L.A., you know, when police are constantly let go for murder and for crimes like this, we've had close to 80 people killed in Los Angeles County by the police in the last 2 years.
Right.
And the exact number is failing me right now. But when all these officers are getting away, it's like they're being given a straight-up green light to do whatever they want to do. And, you know, and that kind of power leads to a lot of corruption. You know, when they know they're not going to be held accountable for anything, there's a lot of people who are going to try to get away with more and more, and that's what's been happening.
Right. And I think it's important that people understand this because, and we're going to take a break and come back, but how this connects is that what I'm talking about and what you're talking about, Age, is not unknown to the judges that sit on these benches because of the brutality, because of things that have been brought up in previous cases, and the fact that we have somebody who in the past has shown favoritism, even in the wake of some of the most egregious things, means that really all eyes should be on this Oscar Grant case in more ways than one. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and continue our conversation. We're back here having an invigorating conversation with Age Patterson. He's a member of the October 22nd Coalition to Stop Police Brutality, also a member of the L.A. Coalition for Justice for Oscar Grant. We were talking about the judge that is overseeing the Grant case before we went to break. His name is Robert Perry, and we were talking about his behavior and some of the things that he did as judge, in particular giving a lot of leniency and letting many of the officers who were involved in one of the nation's largest police scandals ever off the hook, and what we should be prepared for and watching for as the Oscar Grant trials gets underway. One of the things we talked about, Age, last week was this crazy gag order that he put on everybody involved with the case. Even attorney John Burris, who is not even testifying in this case, seemed to be under a gag order when we saw him on the news. Just some of the stuff that we normally usually see him do and the swagger that he had just seemed to be muddled up. We also understand that he said if there was a violation and, you know, people were violating his gag order, that he would bounce the trial back 5 years, which would cause a whole other set of problems, including due process for Meserly. What else can we really start to glean with this, and does that raise any concerns for you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that speaks specifically to, you know, some of the outrage that's been going on this year. If people have heard about this rash of killings at the hands of the L.A. County Sheriff's Department this year, there's been close to 20 people killed by the sheriffs in 2009. And after one weekend, there was three or four people killed on one weekend, including a 16-year-old kid, by the Sheriff's Department. The head of the Sheriff's Department down here had a press conference where he said that they were going to, because of this, they're going to be shortening the amount of time that people were allowed to have for investigations into police misconduct and police shootings from a year down to like a month or two, because they wanted to make sure that things happen quickly and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we had a lot to say about that. You know, it doesn't matter how quickly something is investigated if it's still not investigated correctly. But beyond that, it brings into the forefront the idea and the, you know, the regular pattern that what happens in L.A. a lot of times, or, you know, across the country, is that when these police killings happen, what do they usually do? They usually let these cases sit, and they try to wait until the public outcry has died down, and then they have an easier chance of, you know, of letting these officers off. It's a constant thing with, I remember, with the Devin Brown, who was a 13-year-old boy killed in South Central a few years ago for supposedly, you know, trying to back a car and run a car over a police officer, even though in an investigation afterward it was shown that the police officer was actually on the side of the car and fired through the side, so he wasn't actually in any danger. his case, there was an amazing outpouring from the communities of Los Angeles around this case. But what they did was they held the case for over a year. They let it quiet down the streets, and next thing you know, there came out of their investigation saying there was nothing done wrong. But what did they do? It went from being a front page story because of all the public outcry. So when it actually happened, and it was in the front of everybody's minds anymore, they put it on the back page.
Right. And so by having the gag order, and you know, our own JR from the Block Report talked about this last week, that one of the TV news anchors from up here, from KTVU, went and testified and said it was important that they, you know, have some way to broadcast this back, because there was a lot of attention and interest in the Bay Area on this trial, and the judge absolutely refused. And so this seems to be in line with what you're saying. The end game is to die this out and get people focused on other things. I guess it also shouldn't be too surprising that we also have cameras being limited on the gay marriage trial. And to me, what seems to be really disturbing is that I can turn on TV right now and watch all sorts of reality TV. You know, people are fighting, people are getting drunk, people are having sex, you name it, they do it on TV. But when it comes down to real TV with a real drama where real things are at stake, those things are being obscured with gag orders and limitations that don't seem to jive with the tax dollars we pay.
I mean, no doubt. I mean, this is just our everyday basis. You know, it's let it be known that I think it's probably preaching to the choir to speak to you and your audience on this. But we know that the corporate media is not, you know, an objective source. They function full well in support of the powers that be. You know, gosh, I mean, if it came down to, I mean, how many other shows are there like your show or stations like the station that you guys are on? There's not many that are really willing to really speak to what's really going on out there. They have an agenda. You know, they're run by the same rich people who run the other corporations out there, and they have each other's hands in each other's pockets. You know, they're working fully together on that, and it's no surprise that they wouldn't want to show this stuff. It's no surprise that they would want to cover up this type of information. You know, if it was the opposite way, if it was something they could blow out there like a supposed black on brown crime or something they could use to say, you know, if something they could use to try to, you know, to stir up some racial tension in our own communities, they'd be the first ones jumping on making a front page story about how, oh, these Latinos, you know, got this African American guy, and that's why immigration stands need to be harder and such like that. You know, they'll jump right on those. But when it comes to a case like this where it's in direct, you know, defiance of what they stand for, and when it hurts the people that they support and they back up, you know, they're the first ones to try to shut it down.
Age, let me ask you this. One of the things we know that the police departments are good at is disseminating information, as you suggested, and as we've seen time and time again. They do have access to corporate media. They all have their spokespersons and those are the go-to people. And I can tell you from working in corporate media at a radio station that we always had the spokesperson's phone number. Any crime, anything, you know, our bosses were like, you know, call Chief So-and-so and have them come on and explain what's up. And that's par for course in most of these places.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have a little bit more in-depth campaign where they're starting to use Twitter, flood message boards, even the liberal and progressive message boards. And I wanted to ask, you find it yourself, this October 22nd coalition, that, you know, that sometimes they will actually come to your enclaves and haunts and start to put their own spin and propaganda on things and try to infiltrate the avenues that you use to communicate.
Oh, definitely. You see some interesting things. We have we've had folks come to meetings that are, you know, wanting to put things out. You know, we've definitely had people come in who tried to create divide within the organization. We've had questions on whether or not they've been undercovers, just trying to mess things up. We keep things pretty on point these days as far as knowing everybody within the organizing and stuff. But, you know, that's, I mean, I don't know what it is. Maybe they just haven't gotten smarter at it, or maybe they are so smart at it they just send these specific obvious ones out there that, you know, we can always tell an infiltrator when we see one. But, you know, a lot of times I'm sure they're slicker than that. I'm sure they have those obvious ones out there, and then they have their hidden ones that are less obvious. But, you know, it's a regular practice. I mean, you know, it hasn't stopped since Colin 12 Pro. You know, they just changed the name.
Right. Well, I bring this up and I bring up the thing about media, because if there is a gag order and we have this type of suppression, it's really going to fall on the backs of groups like, you know, the Coalition for Justice for Oscar Grant in L.A. and the people that are up in the Bay to get information out to the public. And do you all have a game plan? And, you know, how challenging will it be? And what can people up here do to help, you know, make sure that the word spreads and that information, accurate information, is being gotten by folks?
Definitely. Well, you know, we're really trying to follow a lot of the lead on what folks in Oakland have been doing in the Bay Area, because, you know, I mean, we're looking at what you guys up there have been doing around Oscar's case as incredibly powerful, and isn't the fact they thought they had to move the case shows the powerful work and the victories that you guys have had up there. So, you know, we're basically trying to follow the same path, and what we were, you know, advised to do by some different folks was to have a couple of folks of our own as reporters within the courtroom so that we can put out our own story of what happened, not rely on what the corporate media is saying. And, you know, first and foremost, we're putting it out through the Indy Media website, and making sure everything on the next day is being posted up on Indy Media with our own exact stories of what's going on. And beyond that, you know, of course, email lists and such, and trying to get the word out like that. And trying to find new and improved ways to do it. You know, we're in a growing process right now. We're still figuring out the best ways to take this case on. But a lot of it is following the lead of what our brothers and sisters in the Bay Area have been doing. So make sure that folks, I would say, to look out on places like Indy Media. Of course, any information that we get, we're gonna, you know, try to get to you guys as soon as we can, you know, and right away, so that hopefully, you know, folks who are on the same side can help spread the information. And beyond that, just keep that movement going in Oakland, you know. Just don't sit on it and wait for us down here in L.A. to try to handle this, because the court case has moved down. That fire needs to be there. You know, the energy still needs to be going in the Bay Area. As much needs to be going on. You know, I know pretty much everybody in the Bay, I would hope, knows about the case. I was actually surprised at how few people actually really remember the case here in L.A., because I remember the day I saw the video first, I think it was like January 3rd last year, I was in tears, and I haven't been able to forget about it since then. But.
Yeah, but you know, immediately afterwards, we had the Annette Garcia case in Riverside.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that weekend where the 16-year-old was shot. I believe there were the two Samoan guys that were on the casino that got shot and killed by the sheriffs. There was like a weekend where there was like four or five civilians were killed by police, and all of them almost questionable. You know, I remember the two Samoan guys were cousins that argued with each other, and there was no weaponry, but they somehow got killed anyway. And I'm just wondering, you know, like you said, there were 20 police killings in L.A. County alone. We're not talking about Riverside County and the others. So when you add that up, you had an astronomical number that, you know, probably came on TV, and it was like, yep, another one, and it kept going. So maybe people might have been a little bit desensitized, which is why the challenge came in as to whether or not people can really be fired up, so to speak, with information, or will Oscar Grant just be like another police shooting?
Anything can go either way, you know. It all really depends on how people are able to proceed with the case and how people are able to, you know, figure out the game plan with it. And it's definitely at a point right now where there could be two different directions, at least, that it could go. The most obvious being, you know, there's not enough support, and this killer gets let go. And the other being, there is such an outpouring of support that they're forced to convict this guy. You know, with our coalition, I guess I can't really speak for the coalition, but on a personal level, you know, because we do have such a diversity of folks, I don't believe we can trust in the justice system to find justice, you know, with us just sitting back and crossing our fingers and hoping that, you know, this American justice system is going to work out this time. If he's going to be convicted, it's going to be because people demanded it, and because there was such an outpouring of people who were in support of Oscar, of his mother, of his daughter, of his relatives, of his girlfriend, of his best friends who had to watch that in terrible crime. It's going to be because people stand up and refuse to let this officer just be let go. So, you know, this is a case that is really up to the people of Los Angeles, to the people of Oakland, California, and really nationwide. This needs to be made into a nationwide story. The work to be done right now is tireless work. It's got to be a lot of trying to get the word out. We're starting to canvas the streets just block by block. We're going to try to knock on every single door in Los Angeles, and this needs to happen in multiple cities. You know, hopefully folks down in San Diego can start, you know, getting folks in San Diego knowing about the case, just in case this judge does try to move the case again.
Right. Does it make sense to make, and are you guys talking with the families of some of these other police shootings to make sure that they see that this is symbolic as well. And I use the word symbolic because for folks outside of the Bay, if you don't know, there were caravans that went up to Sacramento to really demand some outside investigation and what have you. And one of the interesting things that came out, just to show you how deep this gets, is that every single police union in the state of California got behind the BART union and those people to oppose whatever measures were being taken to try and bring swift, you know, accountability and justice for this killing of Oscar Grant. So in other words, the police unions were like, we see this as symbolic. We got to make sure this guy gets off. Now the question becomes, all of us who have knowledge and all of us who have dealt with and have seen and have been frustrated, from the Sean Bells in New York to the Adolfo Grimes in New Orleans to the Annette Garcias in Riverside to the Oscar Grants in Oakland, will we be able to get behind and really support the on-the-ground efforts like you guys, that you guys are doing right now?
I mean, you know, I don't think there could be a stronger statement that's been made than the statement of, I am Oscar Grant. I definitely think this is something that a lot of folks in L.A. are seeing, that, you know, what that means is that this could be any of us, and it has been any of us, and this could have happened to anybody across Oakland, across Los Angeles, across this nation, in communities of color and in poor communities. And speaking to what you were talking about with the other families, trying to get support from them, yeah, there was actually Keisha Brunston, who is the auntie of DeAndre Brunston, who was shot on video over 80 times by the Compton sheriffs in 2003. She spoke, and also did Senora Porfiria Rivera, who's the mother of Carlos Rivera, who was a high school senior at a local school, Santee High School here in L.A., who was within a month or two of graduating high school and who was killed by the Newton Division LAPD officers. There are also numerous other families, such as Christian Portillo's family, who he was killed in Lenox by the Lenox sheriffs last year. Dante Story's family, Dante's, was killed less than 2 months before Oscar. Saul Soriano, who was another brother besides Adolph Grimes and Oscar, who were all three killed on New Year's last year. Saul Soriano being from the Panorama City area of the San Fernando Valley here in L.A.
Right.
And this has just happened over and over. And, you know, it's not just the murder. It's the conditions that we live in our communities where, you know, you always feel like the police could shoot you and get away with it. And it couldn't be truer that we all are Oscar Grant. And it is that symbolism. And it's very important that we all take that stance, that this could have been any of us. And if this police officer, and not just this one, but all these officers need to be indicted on this. You know, it wasn't just a crime of one. You know, we don't believe in bad apples within the police department. It's, you know, it's got problems from the roots. You know, all the apples, even if they wanted to be good, are potentially bad because of what the entire foundation of what they're working on is. And so all these officers need to be indicted on this. And it's very important that everybody understands the level of what this case means to not only Oscar's family or for that cop in particular, but it also means for just our relations with police and what police are allowed to get away with. If this cop is allowed to get away with this terrible murder, what is that going to say for future cops? You know, what is that telling them, that they can get away with executing people live on camera and still get away with it? What is that going to mean in our communities? But if we can all stand up and say that we are all Oscar Grant and stand up and force this court system to give us justice, then, you know, they're going to have to think twice. And this could be a completely pivotal point in our entire history.
No, that's real talk right there. You know, how can we get a hold of you as we close out and, you know, keep those sobering words in mind?
Well, you can reach us a couple of ways. We started up a listserv. The email address, it's a long one, but it's la-coalition-4-justice-4-oscar-grant@googlegroups.com. It's basically, it's LA Coalition for Justice for Oscar Grant at googlegroups.com, but with a dash in between each of those.
Right.
And then also, we don't have our own phone number for the LA Coalition yet, but with the October 22nd Coalition, we do have a phone number. It's area code 323 446-7459. And any information that comes through there can get relayed directly to the LA Coalition for Justice for Oscar Grant.
As I'm closing out, one thing, we had talked about some of the gangs or slash clubs that exist within law enforcement down there. One of the things I found to be very interesting was the LAPD and sheriff departments having their own beefs with each other that sometimes played itself out when they were on patrol. And I wanted to know if you saw if they were uniting around this as well, even though they have their very real differences that have sometimes been very physical.
Most definitely. They are definitely getting each other's backs on this. Yeah, I mean, this is something that not only do we need to see as we are all Oscar Grant, but each one of them is looking at it like we are all Johannes Messerly, you know?
Yes.
They're the same people. They're the ones who, if this is convicted, they're the ones who are going to have to be like, oh, snap, I can't just go around killing people and think that just because they got it on video that it's going to be okay. Because, you know, the ill thing is, you know, ever since Rodney King, everybody's talked about who's got the camera, right? But we look into all these cases. There's been dozens of cases I can think about that have been caught, brutality caught on tape, and still nothing happens to these police officers. So even since Rodney King, police officers have felt like they can get away with stuff even if it's on tape. You know, and so what does this mean if this case is going to come down and they can actually be held accountable? You know, these police officers, day and night, are going to have each other's back. So I don't know who it was exactly, but they were able to post, what, $1 million bail to get Messerly out. They're standing in full support of him. They understand the extreme level that this case is taking. They know that this could change everything within their entire line of work and their entire way of doing things. They know that there's no room for any of them to have beef with each other right now. They know they're all on one side against one other side. And we really need to see that too, you know, and I think that is happening here. I think in our meetings that we've just started having for this newly formed Coalition for Oscar Grant, we've seen such an extreme diversity of folks that on the real folks do argue, you know, about the politics, and a lot of folks do have problems with each other, but have been able to come together and get past it and saying, you know what, even though we do have these issues, we don't, you know, necessarily care for each other's organizing, or we have, you know, there's big arguments within folks, within the communities. Everybody is understanding that we're
right.
All on one side in this. And this is too big of a deal for these petty differences to take control. We need to stand together on this.
That's right. And if the L.A. Sheriff and LAPD can get together on one accord, and they do have beef for folks who live in L.A., they definitely know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
If they can do it, we definitely can do it, and we should do it. And that's very symbolic if they got each other's back in that way. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. Also, want to remind people that there was a report that came out that talked about the Inglewood police. You know, they found the Inglewood police being very problematic with their way of doing things, and that might be another rallying point the home of Mac 10 and everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to maybe come together and get behind this Oscar Grant movement as they see that their own police departments are corrupt and being brought into question as well. So thank you, Age. We appreciate it, and we're going to continue on.
Oh, thank you. And if I could, actually, I just forgot to make one quick announcement.
What's that?
If there is anybody who is in the L.A. area or can make it, our next meeting for the coalition is going to be Sunday the 17th. So this coming Sunday at Chuco Justice Center in Inglewood. So, you know, it is being brought together. The Inglewood community is definitely in full support behind Oscar Grant and understanding the similarities and that we're all in the same struggle. So next Sunday, 5 p.m. at Chuco's Justice Center, which you can look up online.
We appreciate that. We are out for now. Peace.
Thank you, fam.